Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. How a work buddy can improve your well-being and your workplace. Research suggests that having a good friend at work can make things better for everyone. By Jill Suddy, January 20, 2026. When I was 16 years old, I got my first real job at a local Jack in the Box. It was not a great gig, for sure, working over a hot grill and dealing with rude, demanding customers. But I was saved from misery by my work buddies, friends who'd crack jokes, commiserate, and pitch in if I fell behind. Since then, having a work buddy has always been important to me, which is why I've cultivated friendships throughout my work career. Those special friends have helped me maintain my focus and commitment to the job and increase my sense of safety and belonging. When things got rough, I had someone to confide in, get perspective from, and count on in a pinch. Researchers who study organizational health and friendships agree that having a work buddy is a plus, helping employees and their workplaces function better. Everything you do at work will be better when people get along well with each other than when they don't, says organizational scholar Stephen Friedman of York University, Canada. The things that are difficult become just a little bit easier. Why work friends matter? Workplace buddies can function like other friendships, helping us feel emotionally supported when we need it. They can provide instrumental assistance too, like offering to cover our shift if we're out sick or taking on some tasks when we're overwhelmed. And since we spend so much of our lives at work, having friends on the job can help stave off loneliness, contributing to our health and well-being over time. Moreover, having a work buddy can also improve workplace culture and organizational health. As Gallup poll researcher Tom Roth wrote in his book, Vital Friends, The People You Can't Afford to Live Without, people who have a best friend at work are 7 times more likely to have higher worker engagement. That higher engagement, in turn, has been tied to all kinds of benefits to the workplace, including less absenteeism, fewer safety issues, longer retention, productivity, and the ability to manage challenges on the job. That makes friendships on the job a win-win for companies and their employees. There's some really robust research that friendships at work improve workplace outcomes in ways that friendships outside of work might not, like productivity, performance, likelihood of retention, engagement, cohesion on teams, says Marissa G. Franco, professor at the University of Maryland and author of the best-selling book, Platonic. Franco points to research by BetterUp, showing how much companies save when people are connected and feel like they belong. People want to work with someone who's competent, but also friendly and warm, she says. It definitely benefits a workplace a lot if they can be intentional about helping people form connections, she said. Their employees will perform better, their teams will be more cohesive, and they're more likely to retain people. The challenges of friends at work. That doesn't mean it's always easy to make those connections. In fact, Gallup recently reported that 1 in 5 employees worldwide feel lonely at work, and fewer people say they have a close friend on the job, especially among younger adults. One potential factor making it harder to connect is proximity. More of us work remotely now, in part a consequence of the COVID pandemic, which can decrease opportunities for casual contact between colleagues. If we aren't bumping into each other at the water cooler or grabbing a spontaneous lunch, it might be harder to jumpstart a friendship. Workers tend to change jobs more frequently than they used to, too, which can hurt or end a work friendship. People with temporary employment are lonelier, perhaps because they don't have as much time to develop meaningful friendships. But those factors don't tell the whole story. Our own reluctance to prioritize social connection at work can also take a toll. We may worry that it's not appropriate to make friends at work. Maybe we'll be dinged by our employer, or maybe our friendship could cause conflicts or affect our productivity. These concerns are not trivial. Indeed, they are part of the reason not all researchers say work friendships are beneficial. Sometimes maintaining close relationships takes time and effort, which could mean less of each for reaching organizational goals. Conflicts between friends at work might also spill out into the workplace. For example, what if you are promoted over your friend, or vice versa? Could that create bad feelings between you and affect your work and your friendship? Quite possibly, says Franco. It's hard for friendship to happen in a hierarchy, because if we're on the bottom of that hierarchy, we're not sharing certain things about ourselves. We're afraid of being judged, says Franco. If we're at the top of the hierarchy, we may question whether that person can bring as much to our lives as we can bring to theirs. So hierarchy can really be antithetical to friendship. On the other hand, she adds, it doesn't have to be a deal breaker. Don't assume because of the title change that there's going to be a change in your dynamic, she says. You can always talk things through and decide how to be in relationship to those changes, potentially making it work, she adds. It may be hard to be our true selves at work all of the time, though, she adds. A guise of professionalism may mean less real or vulnerable, impinging on connection. Plus, self-disclosure can make people uncomfortable, perhaps especially in a competitive work environment. People might be afraid to share something with a colleague that can be used against them in the workplace and affect their professional success, says Franco. Workplace friendships can sometimes become insular, as we tend to form bonds with people who are like us in some way, for example, of the same race, ethnicity, generation, gender, etc. If work groups don't feel welcome to everyone, it could make people feel like they don't belong. That could create problems, says Franco. Do benefits outweigh problems? Still, these potential issues shouldn't stop us from having friends at work, says Franco. There are ways to connect across differences, manage emotional conflicts, and do our jobs well while having friends, to everyone's benefit. There's a misconception sometimes that when someone's focused on friendships, they're not focused on their tasks. But honestly, we're not made to be completely focused on tasks for 8 hours a day, she says. It's kind of impossible, and social breaks actually make you perform better. Friedman agrees, saying that many reasons people give for foregoing work friendships are misguided. There is no relationship with another human, friendly or otherwise, that doesn't contain risks, he says. It's the same thing with workplaces. Like anything in life, work friendships have risks, but can bring great benefit when they work out. Besides, he adds, when so many of us spend a lot of time at work, it's important to cultivate positive social connection there in order to thrive. The idea that I'm going to go to work and cut myself off from having friends is unreasonable and not a good idea, he says. Especially if you're a working professional, you're not going to spend nearly as much time at home as you will with the people that you work with. So it makes sense to have friendships at work. How to foster friends on the job. Of course, no one can insist that you make a friend at work, but if we want our workplaces to be caring, compassionate, productive place to be, fostering positive connection on the job may help. To do that, Friedman suggests taking the initiative and making an effort to put yourself out there. If you can become more approachable and friendly and get your face out of your phone and notice the people around you, it will improve your chances, he says. Even in cases where companies have a lot of remote workers and less in-person contact, you can still build intimacy online, says Friedman. You just need to get a bit more creative. If you and I sat here for an hour and grabbed a coffee and shot the shit about life, I think we'd end up having some fondness and connection, he said. Franco, who often works with companies to help build a sense of belonging, suggests making friends across differences by assuming people like you more than you might think, and keeping an open mind. She says, there's this term in research called habitual open-mindedness, where you remind yourself that just from looking at someone, you don't know anything about them, and you can still give them space to unfold in their identity in front of you. That allows you to approach people that might not look like the typical friends that you have. Organizations have a role to play in fostering workplace friendships and belonging too, says Franco. She points to research suggesting that leaving it up to individuals alone is not enough to stave off loneliness, and that leaders can foster positive connection at work in several ways. For example, they can start work meetings with chit-chat, where people can check in about what's going on in their lives. Or they can divide meetings into one part business, one part communal lunch, to encourage socializing. When managers make an effort to create opportunities for connection, there's a 31% difference in how connected people feel in that place, she says. So it does really make a difference if management takes it upon themselves. Buddy programs, kindness campaigns, or happy hours can foster more sense of connection at work, she adds. Similarly, making sure people are recognized for who they are, not just what they do, by celebrating birthdays or offering to help when employees go through hardship, for example, can build a culture of care and inclusivity. Being intentional is key. If you want to create connections across difference, you often have to make activities more structured, she said. Let's say we do board game night, and then people are on a team with people that are of a different group than them. That's really important for connecting. While Friedman is less sure about companies taking the lead and encouraging work friendships, he does think it's important at least not to thwart people's natural inclinations to affiliate with one another. We ought to build community to have a group of people who are going to support us or advocate for us in our department or stand by our side when we need support and encourage psychological safety in our meetings, he says. Both Friedman and Franco say people don't necessarily need to be best friends at work, though. Just have a nice, friendly connection that may be good enough. If you're someone that's really afraid of risk of getting too close, then I would suggest not being black or white about it. Perhaps we can be friends, but just at a certain level of closeness, says Franco. Friedman warns that being too close to a coworker might cloud our judgment, just as being too distant from them can. It's best to find a happy medium, he says. Someone you're friendly with and maybe hang out with a little after work, rather than someone who's your bosom buddy. In that way, you can reap the benefits of having a work friend and hopefully avoid any pitfalls. When we're friendly with people at work, we collaborate better, we solve problems better, we're more forgiving of each other, and we're kinder to each other, he says. I think we need lots more of that everywhere. About the author. Jill Suddy, Doctor of Psychology, is Greater Good's former book review editor and now serves as a staff writer and contributing editor for the magazine. She received her doctorate of psychology from the University of San Francisco in 1998 and was a psychologist in private practice before coming to Greater Good. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you Greater Good Magazine. And the next article is also by Jill Suddy. Why should you prioritize your friendships? A new book looks at how friendships in its many forms contribute to our well-being. By Jill Suddy, October 19th, 2018. When I recently moved my youngest son into college and felt unexpected grief at my empty nest, I turned to my friends for help. These are women I've known more than 40 years who know me better than anyone else and gave me exactly what I needed: a sympathetic ear, lots of hugs, time in nature, a dose of laughter, and the warm feeling of being loved and understood. Despite how much we rely on friends, there is little science about the power of friendship. In part, that may be because friendships come in so many flavors, from people we connect with on Facebook to colleagues who are our closest confidants to friends who are almost like family. How can you capture all of these different facets of friendship in one place? A new book, The Friendship Cure by Kate Lever aims to do that. Filled with interviews, insights, and at least some of the science behind social connection, the book explores the many physical and emotional benefits of friendship in all of its forms, from besties to bromances to work buddies and more. The roots of friendship. It's clear that humans are social animals, and that's why our bodies and brains evolved in ways that help us bond with others. We make friends and create intimacy through activities like touch, which releases the hormone oxytocin and increases trust. Gossip, which helps us understand our place in a social network and prevent unsavory characters from entering it, and moving in sync with others, which releases endorphins and increases bonding. That's why you see teenage girls heaped together at slumber parties, dancing and gossiping their way through the night, writes Lever. Though we are driven to create connections with one another, we also have limits on how many relationships we can tend to. Or, says the research of Robin Dunbar at Oxford University, who studies friendships and whom Lever interviews, he has found that people generally can maintain around 150 social connections of varying degrees of closeness. 5 very close friends, 10 close friends, 35 friends, and 100 acquaintances. Why limit? Friendships are not like relationships with family members, whom you can ignore from time to time because you know you have a biological contract to love one another, writes Lever. They require temporal and emotional commitment, or they simply disintegrate. A little help from your friends. The benefits we receive from these different types of friendship vary. In dealing with my newly emptied nest, I was calling on my inner circle, very close friends who are available for deep emotional support and even practical support, like giving me a ride or cooking me a meal that might otherwise come from a partner or intimate family member. The next layer of friends might be folks you actively arrange to meet for a cup of coffee or to see on your birthday, while the next group might be people you can count on for simple favors that you'd be willing to return. The largest group are what researchers call weak ties, who are less emotionally tied to you, but who might offer a different perspective on what's going on in the world or help when you go job seeking. Facebook friends you actively follow might fall into this group. Friends provide physical, moral, social, and emotional support when we need it, writes Lever. Researchers believe that friends act like a circle of altruism, helping protect us from suffering or from being harmed by others. Perhaps that's why research suggests that as we age, friends become even more important to our well-being. Friends also help reflect back to us who we are and where we belong in the world, writes Lever. Of course, some are just great fun to be around, people with whom we can laugh, play sports, grab a drink, or watch a movie. Lever also covers the dark sides of friendship. As with romantic relationships, not all friendships are healthy and not all last. Sometimes besties end up parting ways, or people you thought you could trust betray you. Friendships end for many reasons, such as misunderstandings, relocations, changing values, or simply growing apart. While it's natural, Losing a friendship can be deeply painful and add to our sense of loneliness. One of the great scourges of our time, says Lever. Loneliness is a very real danger to us all, she writes. Puts us at great risk of clinical dementia, heart attack, stroke, and death. More so than smoking 15 cigarettes a day or being obese. Lever's book provides much food for thought about what friendships mean and why they are important. Without friends, I'm convinced my life would be diminished in many ways. For sure, I would have had a much tougher time recovering from my spell of grief. My only hope is that when my friends need me, they know they can count on me to provide the same support for them. After all, that's what friends are for. And again, that book is The Friendship Cure, Reconnecting in the Modern World by Kate Lever, L-E-A-V-E-R. You've been listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.